This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. My guest today is Robert Stone, an Oscar and Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker. His films include Radio Bikini and Gorilla, The Taking of Patty Hearst, and Oswald's Ghost. Now his latest film is Earth Days, which was highlighted this year at Sundance. Robert Stone, welcome to Progressive Radio.
I'm happy to be here.
I was preparing for this interview, and I read that you made your first film about pollution back when you were 11 years old. How did it happen that at 11 you made a movie about the environment?
Well, my dad had given my mom a Super 8 movie camera for Christmas, and which I immediately appropriated. So I remember playing around with, you know, Super 8 films with my friends, and I was always the cameraman because I'd been playing around with cameras since I was a little kid because my dad was an avid photographer, and you know, cameras were always around the house. And yeah, Earth Day came along, and it was just an incredible eye opener for me, and I think everybody from our generation. I mean, you know, the environment was just something kids can just intuitively get their head around.
Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, the whole idea, you know, species extinction, you know, animals. Kids love animals. They just, you know, I don't really know. I've tried to give this some thought, but, you know, just pollution, the earth, all of that is just something kids just intuitively understand in a way that grown-ups, perhaps because we've got so many other things going on in our life, we're less attuned to, you know, what's going on in the yard and what's... We're wired differently, but kids just get it, and I got it, and everybody I knew got it, and it really had a profound effect on me. And I made this little movie about pollution in my little town in New Jersey, and showed it in school. And you know, I got to say, in many sort of very strange ways, I think everything I've done professionally from that moment to finishing Earth Days is there's a strong thread connecting those things.
Was that first film, Robert Stone, well received? Did you get props for it, and did that get you going?
I don't know how well it was received. It was just one roll of Super 8 film. It wasn't edited or anything. I still have it. It's incredibly crude.
Have you watched it any time recently?
I was going to use a little clip of it in the end credits, but it just was too – nobody would know what it was. And too embarrassing anyway. I mean, today 11-year-olds are like using, you know, Final Cut Pro and making like very sophisticated films.
Some 11-year-olds. It's interesting, Robert Stone, that you mention the environment is almost an inherently eye-opening issue for children. It is then a portal toward progressive politics in a way, or a natural entry point. And do you think we make the most of that in the progressive movement?
That's a good question. I think it definitely opens your mind to some very fundamental things. You start to question some very fundamental things about the way our whole society is structured. And you start to say, well, you know, this doesn't make sense. Like, why... why does the American economy have to grow at 4% a year for us to keep functioning? And what is that doing to us? And how can we sustain that decade after decade without completely gobbling up every resource on the planet and destroying our environment? So when you start to think about environmental issues, it starts to refocus your thinking about economic issues and political issues and social issues, and it kind of takes over your life.
When did you decide you wanted to be a filmmaker? I suppose it wasn't at 11 years old now, was it?
I certainly was playing around with cameras a lot. I didn't really decide, oh, this is something I'm going to do until I went to college. And even then I was majoring in history, but I ended up hanging around with all these film students and kind of fell in with the film department here. At that point, I had made a film in college, which is, again, the thread is there from that little movie I made when I was 11 to that movie, which I made when I was in college, to what I'm doing now. It was a movie called Wake Up, and we showed it to like 700 students at a huge lecture hall.
What's
on
it about?
Campus. It was a film about America, and we like went and we snuck cameras into the assembly lines, and we went in, we broke into the Standard Oil corporate headquarters and did sort of Roger and Me kind of thing, and we went to shopping malls, and we just made a film about just kind of how, in a very crude sort of naive way, how kind of screwed up American society is in our naive little, you know, college political view of things. But it was a huge hit. And suddenly, you know, I went from a completely obscure person on campus to somebody that, you know, people knew, and, you know, girls were interested in going out with me and stuff like that.
Well,
it was all good thing. I said, yeah, this is cool. I'm going to be a filmmaker.
And did you go out to California then, or how'd you get from here to there?
No, I didn't. I thought about it. I really thought I was going to go to Hollywood and make feature films. And but I had never really made a film that was going to be an introduction to me getting that kind of work. So I thought I was majoring in history, and I'd done my senior thesis in history about this island in the Pacific called Bikini, where they tested atom bombs. And by some twist of fate, at age 20, I was the world expert on this one little obscure thing. So I thought, well, I probably get money to make a documentary about this one little thing because I'm the world expert at this one little thing. And I did, and it got nominated for an Oscar and was very widely shown around the world, and that kind of got me started making documentaries. From that point on, I was able to get money to do documentaries, and I kept going.
What sticks with you from Radio Bikini, from that experience, from talking to people there?
That I never want to raise money from foundations again. That was one thing that stuck with me from that experience. It was hard. That was 7 years of really, really, you know, hand-to-mouth living to get that film made.
Well, how do you raise money for your films now?
I get money from I can get money from television, you know, and so it's, you know, things are better.
You did the taking of Patty Hearst. What captivated you about that, about the Patty Hearst story? Because you brought it kind of back to life.
Oh, God, I just remember when that happened in the early 70s, I just remember that was just the craziest story. And I just couldn't believe year after year went by and I never saw a good film about it. Nobody had ever made a good documentary about it. There was Paul Schrader's film, I think, in the 80s, which is a Hollywood film, which I thought was good and had some really good elements to it and got the sort of ironic, weird qualities that I appreciated. But anyway, it just seemed to be one of the great American stories that had never been told. And I have this very strong interest in the media and mass media spectacles and how the media reacts to stories and how we react to these media sensations. And I felt that this story had it all. And it was one of the first great media sensations. It came about at this crossroads when the news media was moving really from becoming a news medium, as we used to know it, to becoming an extension of the entertainment industry. And this story sort of had all of that, plus a lot of weirdness about the left. I've always been a bit of a gadfly, the left a little bit. I am of the left, but I also like to poke it in the ribs sometimes. And that was because I thought the SLA had taken the left and like drove it over a cliff. They'd taken all the rhetoric of the 60s, all the radical rhetoric and ideology, and just taken it to its logical or completely illogical conclusion. And that was a death of I think 60s radicalism was that kid.
These vanguard militant violent.
Right. Which a lot of people still think, you know, some people on the left actually criticized me for making that film because, you know.
And Patty Hearst herself, did she ever become a willing guerrilla there? That's the riddle.
Well, sure, that is the riddle of this story. And It's not a cut and dry thing. Basically, the argument that I lay out in the film, to the degree that I lay out a specific argument at all about this, is that she joined a cult. Mm-hmm. The SLA was a cult, as were a lot of these kind of groups. They became increasingly cult-like. And in the throes of being part of this cult, she acted willingly to the degree that, you know, she was a cult member. But was she herself? No. When she got out of it and got kind of deprogrammed, she was no longer that, and she went back to her old life. But that was an argument you could present as a defense, legal defense. So in her legal defense, she said that she did everything. She was coerced to do all this stuff, and that nobody bought it. And she still holds to that argument. Although, so my film went very much against the argument she's already always put forth, the explanation she's always put forth. She wasn't involved in the film. But when it was done, we showed it to her, and she was very supportive and came out to Sundance and was at the premiere and was incredibly supportive of the whole thing and said it was the best thing that's ever been done on it.
Well, there's Vinny.
As did the former members of the SLA. So I feel I did something good to get those two to agree on something.
I was going
to
say there's some vindication. My guest today is Robert Stone, the Oscar and Emmy-nominated documentary filmmaker. His films include, as we've been talking about, Radio Bikini and Gorilla, The Taking of Patty Hearst. He also did Oswald's Ghost. His latest film, which I want to talk about now, is Earth Days, which was highlighted this year at Sundance. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at The Progressive, and you're listening to Progressive Radio. Earth Days, a return to that childhood concern.
It's all about a returning to my childhood.
It all comes round.
Absolutely.
But so why did you decide to, you know, go back this way?
You know, this film is a bit of a departure for me. It kind of came out of a conversation with my executive producer, Mark Samuels at PBS. And this was like 3 years ago. We'd just come back from Sundance. So we started having this conversation about what I was going to do next, another film. And I'm always like the go-to guy for some like dark subject, you know. I'm right there for that. And he said, Robert, why don't we try to do something that's got some sort of positive message to it? Like the whole country's all – we're all beaten down with Bush and the 9/11 and the Iraq War. Is there anything that you can think of that might sort of lift us out of this? And I thought a little bit about this. And I told Mark in a moment of hyperbole that there were only three things I could remember in my whole life that I felt had a positive impact on our culture. And I cited the Civil Rights Movement, the space program, and the environmental movement.
And the first two had been covered.
Well, they all had been covered to death. But I didn't feel – I thought the environmental movement had gotten – sort of been overshadowed with – it was all happening at the same time, but it had been overshadowed by Vietnam, by civil rights, by all this other stuff that was going on in the 60s, which people concentrate on. But at the nub of it, at the nub of all of that, is I felt like the – as we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, the environmental movement kind of was a coalescing – of all of those, the very best of the ideas that came out of the 60s in terms of questioning some very fundamental things about our society. And I felt that the story of that had never really been told.
And you take that story prior to the 60s for its inception. You started in the 50s. Why did you start there as opposed to like Rachel Carson or something?
Well, I wanted to explain – the film is told through the eyes of nine people. And I wanted to – show how that 60s generation sort of came out of the 1950s with this desire to remake the world. Like what was it that happened in their childhood that made them who they were, you know? I mean, this is a generation that's older than me, but I remember I was very much involved. I grew up in a college town. My dad was, you know, a pretty activist professor. So I experienced the 60s as a child in a way that a lot of other people my age didn't. But, you know, one of the, I think, fundamental things that shaped that generation was growing up in the shadow of the bomb and the sense that the world could be devastated, human extinction could take place caused by humans. That was just a totally radical concept. No other generation had ever experienced or thought about that before. And when you're experiencing that and getting these ideas put in your head as a child, it has a profound influence on you.
But the influence could run in the other direction. It could be defeatism, fatalism, nihilism, not just activism.
It could, and I think there was a lot of that going on in the 60s too. You know, I think there was a ton of that. But at its best, I think there was a thought that so the society as it is structured – is fundamentally haywire is wrong. There's something that, to live in a world like this where in a split second human beings could destroy life on Earth is cockeyed. It's cockamamie, and something's got to be done about it. And I think in a very sort of crude sort of psychological sense, that is was the great impetus behind a lot of what was going on in the 60s and what made that generation different. So I wanted to go back in the 50s, explore that, explore the materialism of the 50s, the fears of the 50s, this dichotomy, this utopian view of a technological future plus this dystopian view that it could all go terribly wrong, that I think was the baggage that the 60s generation sort of carried with it.
Speaking with Robert Stone about his latest film, Earth Days, which isn't out yet. It's going to air on PBS next April, right before Earth Day. Is there a way people can get a snapshot of it?
Well, it's going to be out in movie theaters across the country beginning in late June, I believe. So it's going to get a pretty wide release. We
hope. And EarthDaysMovie.com is a website people can go to. Robert Stone, how'd you decide to profile these nine Americans? That must have been hard selecting from all the environmental activists you could have picked from.
Well, I didn't really want to make an activist film. I didn't want to make a film about activists or activism. But I felt the subject of this film is so deep. It's really it deals with some very heavy issues about the way our whole society is structured and how we, in a course of a single generation, really rethought our whole relationship with nature. Now that as a subject it could be just a dry sort of boring either history or science documentary you'd see on television. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something that was really a cinematic experience. It really engaged people, and the only way to do that is to make a film that's as much about the messengers as it is about the message. So I wanted to find people who had personal to follow their personal journey of awakening to the crisis, of becoming involved in creating a movement to address the crisis, and which is the story of the film. So you see this whole all this stuff happening through their eyes. And I wanted people the group that I selected, they're all very different from one another. And I think in a strange sense, they all kind of represent both different aspects of the crisis and different aspects of the movement that arose to confront it. And any one of them taken as an individual would only just give you one sliver of a slice at what this movement was and what it became. But together, I think they sort of form a broad canvas.
I'm talking with Robert Stone about his latest film, Earth Days, which is going to be out in theaters in June, and you can go to EarthDaysMovie.com to find out more about it. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Robert Stone, one of the people you profile was a surprise to me, and that is the astronaut, Rusty Schweiker.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about him.
I heard Rusty speak at a I think it was at the Environmental Film Festival back in 1990 or something. And he told a story about being out in space and floating out in space for 15 minutes and having this really kind of a religious experience. I'd never heard that story before. I heard every other space story. I had never heard that before. And it just always sat there in the back of my mind. So when it came about, started making Earth Days, I remembered this and I started looking up more about Rusty. And to me the image of space, the image of the Earth from space, is an absolutely pivotal flip for, I think, humanity. Personally, okay, it happened in my lifetime. Maybe I'm saying, okay, this is a big deal because it happened in my lifetime. But I think for the ages, that was a absolute revolution.
And why is that so important? Why was that so revelatory?
It really kick-started the whole environmental movement. I mean, that image really reframes one's thinking about where one is in the Earth, and as a living thing, and related to this planet, and related to space. And it's almost like a religious, philosophical light bulb goes off in your head when you see that image. So the whole space program, how that impacted the movement, was very interesting to me, and I wanted somebody to address that. And Rusty just had this incredible, very personal and very unusual story, in that he was the first person to ever go out of a spaceship untethered. And he had this, because of a mechanical thing that went wrong, I think to this day he's the only astronaut who's ever had this experience. He floated in space for 5 or 10 minutes, totally without, in radio silence, having nothing to do. Like these astronauts, they always have something to do, you know? And he's just floating there, and he just blew his mind. And then he came back, and over the years he was able to articulate this. He really thought about it. He became this hippie. He totally adopted the counterculture completely. And so he was, and he became, well, they called him the hippie astronaut. But that wouldn't have been enough to put him in the film. What interested me further was that he ended up going to work under Governor Jerry Brown and became the Commissioner of Energy in California, where they were doing really radical breakthroughs in policy on how to structure a sustainable energy environment for California, or start the process of that. So all of which came out of this revelation he had about the Earth and mankind and our future. You know, and now the guy's he's tracking killer asteroids. Like, he's the guy in charge of this project to track killer asteroids. So he's just a remarkable person.
Yeah, fascinating. Nothing about never really knew anything about the guy. So the you focus on the original Earth Day, Robert Stone, and you know, in going over material on the movie, I remembered or saw again the gigantic magnitude of that Earth Day. Which was kind of unparalleled.
It was the largest demonstration in American history. 10% of the American population took part in it in one degree or another. It was a really remarkable event that hasn't been repeated. What was so remarkable about it, and I'm really hopeful that maybe Earth Day 2010 can be an event like this, was that it wasn't like Live Aid or something where there was like some rock concert and everybody experienced it by watching it on television, which is what these kind of events have been since then. People actually participated. They went out in their community and they did things and actively engaged in doing something for the environment. It could be planting a tree or picking up garbage or recycling or something. And it was a community active involvement of getting out in the streets and doing something. And so people became personally engaged and personally invested in this. And then the probably the most lasting thing to come out of it was that school teachers all over the country, who a lot of them who were young, you know, some of them quite radical, they were just of that generation, they couldn't talk about civil rights to their kids in the classes, they couldn't talk about Vietnam, but the environment was something they could. And it instilled this this curriculum about science and biology and ecology in school curriculums all over the country. And still to this day, Earth Day is I've got two small kids in school, and you know all they're doing this month is environmental studies, and it's great.
To what extent, Robert Stone, filmmaker, his latest film, Earth Days, has Earth Day been co-opted by corporations who have this fake green imagery?
Well, that's, you know, everything's co-opted these days in about a nanosecond, so that's not surprising. I think that certainly happened. I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think certainly corporations are spending far more on PR than they are in actually doing something. But, I don't really know how to respond to that.
Well, that's right. Tell me about your craft. I mean, you use a lot of archival footage in your documentaries. How hard is that to find? How much of that is a treasure hunt? Do you enjoy that, or do you farm that out now? I mean,
no, I don't farm it out at all. I still make films pretty much the same way I always have. It's a very small little operation. I tend to look at everything, and I did in this case too. I just looked at absolutely everything I could get my hands on related to the environmental movement through the 60s and 70s, and then out of that sort of synthesized what movie I could make out of this. And, you know, one of the big sort of breakthroughs I had conceptually in this film that came sort of halfway through really came out of talking with Stuart Brand. He's the, those of you who don't know, is the founder of the Whole Earth Catalog, which is a big deal back in the 60s and 70s. He was really perhaps the first person to understand that the image of the Earth from space would be just a remarkable thing that might have a profound impact on people. But more than that, his real contribution to the whole environmental movement was this understanding that one of our problems in coming to grips with the environmental crisis is one of perception, and that we live lives of, say, 80 years, if we're lucky, you know, where these biologic, we move around at a certain speed, we're stuck in a certain time-space warp that prevents us from seeing things other than how we've always seen them. And the environmental problems are enormous, and they take place over long periods of time that are beyond the scope of what we're able to really perceive as human beings. Like we claim that we care about our children, our grandchildren. We don't actually behave as if we care about our children beyond our own death. And it's just a biological thing, and we're just hardwired to think short-term. It's one of the reasons we got into this financial crisis, too. We're short-term thinkers. It just comes out of our nature, how we evolved. But technology has enabled us to expand our perception in new and radical ways. Drugs expanded the perception of a lot of people in the 60s. Airplanes expanded our perception of space by lifting us off the ground. So we use a lot of aerial shots in the film. High-speed cameras can enhance your perception of time. So you take a smokestack, which is spewing garbage into the sky. You speed that up. It's not changing the essence of what the smokestack is doing, but suddenly you look at it and go, oh my God, that just can't keep going on like that. So things like that. And that, so we incorporated those kind of ideas. And then obviously going into space, technology again was really responsible for us being able to see the Earth from space and really sort of changed our perception of our entire relationship to the planet. And that was really a major contribution of Stewart, and I tried to incorporate that into the visual palette of the film.
I think he had the picture of the globe on the cover of that magazine forever.
Well, what he did, and we sort of do this with special effects in the film, what he did is he took a picture of the sky through a fisheye lens and put it on the cover of the magazine, and it looks very similar, remarkably similar to what the Earth actually looks like from space. So he's a real visionary.
We've got less than a minute left. Robert Stone, I've got a nephew who wants to be a documentary filmmaker. What advice do you have for him and other people who want to go into your business?
I would advise against it. It's really hard. It's a really tough business. I've been incredibly fortunate to get where I am. But, you look around and what you see are the successes, because those are the films that get out there. What you don't see are there's so many documentaries out there, and it's very hard to find a market for them. It's very easy to make them now with the new technologies with Final Cut Pro and cameras. Distribution, there's a logjam with distribution, and it's very hard to make a living at it. But if you're passionate about it and you want to dedicate your whole life to it and be damned with everything else, go for it.
There you have it. Robert Stone, thanks so much for being my guest today. His latest film, Earth Days.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.